good afternoon and welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined this week by a very special guest, our exclusive post-pay-per-view guest, Sean Ennis. Sean, how's it going today?
Going really well, man. I'm just trying to recover from a long wrestling weekend.
Yeah, there is a lot to recover from, and we're not even the ones taking the bumps. I can't even imagine the people who are actually involved in it that take such a physical toll of watching wrestling 2 days in a row. I think that really speaks to our level of athletic ability, if you will.
Poor Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
He's really recovering today.
Yeah. And he gets nothing. And he's got to work again tonight, so that's
right.
That's no good. Yeah, wrestling, this is a weird sidebar, but in Mick Foley's book, he talks about how you never get to enjoy your match the way, like, you know, people win the Super Bowl and they spend 2 weeks celebrated. Like, great, you main event WrestleMania, and then you're at Raw the next night taking bumps. Yep. and doing everything. So this is our version of that, our much safer version of that. We're doing a podcast the day after SummerSlam. But if you want to get in on this banter that we are having, which is so exciting, as you can tell, talk to us. Get with us. Get to us on social media. Two Twitter accounts you can get to us at: the proper MMA Torch account at MMA Torch, and the show specific account at MMA Livecast. And you can hit us up on email for your long form questions. That email address is MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. Okay, Sean, let's jump right into it. Before we get into the specifics, give me a letter grade on how you felt SummerSlam played out.
Oh, man, on SummerSlam, I would say, you know, there were some parts that I was really down on, but there was a lot of solid stuff there. I'd say probably like a B-, maybe even a B.
Yeah, I'm going to echo that. I'm going to go solid B on it, because I feel like this was one of the rare marathon pay-per-views that didn't feel like it drug a ton. And I think they use squash matches on one of these shows, which was really effective whenever you have a really long show that, you know, you kind of get in, you get the big entrance, and it gets out. We talked about that last week, how, oh man, look at all these matches, and this isn't going to be WrestleMania 6 where all the matches are 3 minutes long. The matches that needed time got time, and I think with the exception of maybe the Owens-Strowman match could have used a little bit more time. Everything was timed out, I think, in the appropriate manner. And in the main event, you had Brock Lesnar finally dropping the Universal title to one Roman Reigns. Now, this has big implications, not only for the WWE side, which we'll get into later on with Roman being the champ and where they go forward, but for our show specifically, now Brock Lesnar is free to spread his wings and fly to the UFC. Are you thinking this is it? Was last night the last time we're ever going to see Brock Lesnar in a WWE ring?
At this point, I have learned to never say never with Brock Lesnar. I thought we were never going to see him back in MMA before he fought Mark Hunt. So if I say he's never going back to WWE, I think I'm setting myself up. So I'm going to say maybe.
Yeah, you sound so sure of yourself there. You even put the question, the maybe. But yeah. I would say I'd say it's more than likely, unless he just suffers some devastating injury through training for MMA and UFC. And Brock is weirdly injury prone. Not that he gets hurt, like, you know, in his matches or in his fights necessarily, but he just has always had stuff that goes wrong with him and his opponents at MMA for some weird reason. The Brock Lesnar fight that is booked is never the one that happens down the line. That happened a lot. So I'm gonna say he does, because I don't, even though we're gonna talk about it, he's back in the MMA fold, I don't think he's completely divorcing wrestling this time the way he did on the last run. You know, he's not going out flipping off the fans at MSG the way he did at WrestleMania 20. So I'm gonna say he does come back. And with that said, Sean, do you think with his absence, give it be 1 year, 2 years, a guy in his mid-40s, is there going to be an appetite for Lesnar after he goes away for a while?
There is always an appetite for a guy like Lesnar who can come in and be credible in the ring. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, as long as he looks good and as long as he continues to be able to do the things that he can do, there's absolutely going to be an appetite for Lesnar, even though they turn him into a heel for not loving WWE.
Yeah, which I'm glad, like, we can move on from now, that you don't have to.
Yes, seriously.
The loyalty pledge isn't part of the storyline, which just and it's kind of, like, counterproductive to so much what they've done in the past. Like when Rock had his little run, and that was, you know, we were supposed to accept him as champ and be the babyface, but then they flipped it for this. Yeah, Brock, they're always going to want Brock, and Brock's always going to be somebody that fans in professional wrestling and MMA want to see. And I've said this many months ago, and I think it's still true. Brock maintains the level of kayfabe in the fact that, like, you just don't see him that often. It's not like TMZ cameras are catching up with him, and he's not at these celebrity functions and this and that. So there's always this mystery about, like, what's going on with him? Like, what's happening up in that ranch in Canada? How big is this dude? Like, what is he doing physically? So whenever he does pop up every now and then, it becomes a special thing. Brock, even in his first run, I think proved this out. Brock only becomes not special whenever you see him a lot. And I think that's not a good thing to follow for every superstar. I think other people, them being on TV is what helps them. Less is always more, it's felt like with Brock Lesnar. Let's talk about his physique, though. Was it just me, or did he look tiny last night?
I thought he looked a little slimmer. I thought he looked, and actually, we're not the only ones to mention that. I think Daniel Cormier said something on Twitter about it too. So yeah, I think he did look a little slim. I mean, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to say tiny. Maybe a little smaller for Brock Lesnar. But yeah, I think he's definitely started getting a little slimmed down.
Yeah, tiny is the not appropriate word to use there. It's whatever a tiny version of Brock Lesnar is, like a mammoth right. human being in yes. any other context for sure. And he was red last night, which has become his signature. Of
at least he wasn't purple. I mean, you know, we've seen him purple before. Yeah.
I remember those. I remember when he first started turning red like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And those tabloid British magazines were speculating that he was having like a heart attack during matches, which is it's an aside. But I think he's okay.
I think it's probably a safe bet.
Yeah, safe bet that he didn't die of a heart attack 3 years ago facing John Cena at SummerSlam. I think we could put that to rest. Do you think, though, he mailed in his performance last night? I don't, but I want to
see. No, I don't either.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I thought he was great. Yeah, I thought he was great. He did exactly what he was meant to do. He went in there, got heat for beating up Braun Strowman so that Roman Reigns would get cheered. We'll get to it, but it is the weirdest dynamic for a main event to a major pay-per-view, or, you know, whatever they call these things now, probably ever. It is so strange.
Yeah, it really is. And we'll talk about it in a minute. I did pull up the Daniel Cormier tweet, though. He was tweeting a few things, but the one I think you were referring to is, "Old Brock is looking smaller through the middle. He's getting ready to really come and get that ass whooped. Have fun at this WWE title match, because when we clash, I'm in that ass." And then he followed that one up with, "No more title, now he can come and chase mine. Sorry, Brock Lesnar. Result will be the same." And he actually tagged Brock Lesnar, which is great, because I don't think Brock Lesnar's ever got on his Twitter account.
Oh, you know
he does have that he's got that blue check and all that, but there's no way he's scrolling through his mentions to see what DC said about him on the Twitter machine. Yeah, I thought Brock was great last night. I thought his facial expressions at the beginning of the match when they both came out there, and the way he was looking. Brock has a very subtle way about him of conveying stuff that a lot of people don't have. He doesn't get credit enough for it because he doesn't cut a lot of promos. He doesn't get credit for doing all those little pro wrestling things very, very well. And we didn't see a ton of physicality out of him last night. And again, I don't think this wasn't Ambrose versus Lesnar, where he just kind of did nothing and sat back. I think he played the role in the story, and the lack of action, I think, just has more to do with they tried to get in and get out to get Roman the title and get off the air as quickly as possible. With that said, this is going to be the last time we judge him from a physical standpoint right till he fights Cormier. How do you think he looked physically as far as mobility and all that is concerned? Or was there not enough to judge here?
There weren't enough to judge what he was going to look like in MMA, but he looked good as far as a mobility standpoint generally. It's not like he was having a hard time getting around or anything. You know, yeah, he's red, but that's just Brock Lesnar. I think he looked like he can move just fine.
Yeah, and I do think the aging thing is something that's not really relevant to Brock in many, many ways. I think physically, like, the chemical composition of his body, enhanced or not, is just a different level than most other human beings. So I don't expect him to age at the same rate as you've seen other athletes age. At the same time, when he was in his early 30s, it seemed like he was aging very rapidly with all the health issues that he was having. And secondly, he's a heavyweight, so there's not really such thing as aging out in the heavyweight division. I mean, Andre Orlovsky is still a thing that we're experiencing and a part of. So if Orlovsky can be a thing in the heavyweight division, I'm pretty sure Brock Lesnar can be. We'll talk more about the predictions whenever we get closer to the fight. But I got to ask you, Sean, based on now that we're at this point, do we get to the octagon? Is something going to get in the way of DC and Brock Lesnar happening sometime, say, next year, early next year?
Oh, man. The funny thing is, I don't really consider that being as distinct a possibility as I do for, like, McGregor, Nurmagomedov. You know, I just figure it'll probably happen because it tends to his fights tend to go off, whether it's, you know, even if he ends up fighting. Well, you know, the thing is, he a lot of times he'll end up fighting a different opponent. But I mean, I don't see anything that's going to really stop this one. You know, these are not two guys that tend to injure themselves during camps or what have you. So, yeah, I think it'll probably happen.
And there's been a lot of talk about, for both Nurmagomedov and DC, as not being worthy draws to their future opponents. How well do you think DC can raise his stock from now till this fight?
Oh, I think this fight's going to do bonkers business. I think it's going to be huge. I mean, DC is not even worried about raising his stock. He's going to get a monster payday because he's not sticking around for very long. He's going to get paid, you know, some huge money to fight this to fight Brock Lesnar. And then he's either going to have one more fight or he's going to ride off into the sunset at that point. So, you know, and he can talk, you know, he's a good talker and not one that can talk and be endearing at the same time. So, you know, DC is going to be, he's going to be just fine in the lead up to this fight. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. And I don't really know why that strand of narrative has kind of come out for both Nurmagomedov and DC. I think people are just, I don't know what they're trying to, like, they're trying to make this, oh, it's not Mayweather-McGregor or Mayweather-Pacquiao. It might not do those numbers. Well, like, so what? Like, nothing does those numbers. Those are, like, once-in-a-generation cultural happenings that aren't going to happen all the time. So I'm with you that I just don't see a reason why this isn't going to happen. And what's great about this is Cormier is kind of ever-present in our minds. He's on Twitter all the time. You know, he was tweeting last night. He's on the UFC TV show at least once a week. He does media interviews. So it might even be a bit of a Roxina one where we're so fatigued from the build by the time it gets there that you just kind of want to get
right
through it because, like, you've been hearing that. In that case, we're hearing about it for literally a year. Hopefully this won't be that long. When do you think this fight happens, though?
As soon as it possibly can. Something tells me that they're going to want to have this thing happen, you know, just so that nothing gets in the way, whether it's a drug test or whether it's, you know, the injury thing or, you know, whatever happens. I mean, there's so many different wild cards that can come into play when we're talking about getting MMA fights scheduled, and we've seen it time and time again. So I think once this is possible with the suspension being up and all that kind of stuff, I think that's why Brock has already started training, because I think he's going to want to be ready as soon as he can be. So, you know, maybe, I don't know, was it January or February that they're looking at? I think it's going to be as soon as they possibly can.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And I think it might actually be more incumbent on Cormier and some of his injuries, actually, when they do get back. Obviously, Lesnar can't fight until January. How much do you think Vince is going to boast the fact that Brock could stay in the drug testing pool and get through it without a problem? Should Vince and the WWE use that as part of their own PR campaign?
I don't think they're even just to acknowledge that at all means that he's thinking about it, which I don't think he wants to acknowledge that that's even on his radar.
Yeah, he got burned pretty bad back in 2016, all things considered. And that's the last topic I want to talk about with Brock is, how much will the WWE keep co-opting him now in this little period of where he's kind of in between? We see with The Rock where they go through periods where The Rock is totally their guy and their champion and they built him. And then other times where they act like, you know, The Rock is just another celebrity on the level of like Stephen Amell that's just kind of been around every now and then.
Yeah.
How do you, which is ridiculous if you really think about it. Yeah. I mean, the guy's still called The Rock. You know, it's a name
built
in that company. How much do you think they keep an association to or with Brock Lesnar, at least publicly?
Not at all. I think starting tonight, you know, you'll get one or two mentions in a Roman Reigns promo, But other than that, we won't hear his name at all. I don't think we're going to hear anything.
Why do you think? Is that by design?
Yeah, I do. I think it's by design. I think, you know, we're going to hear about how Roman Reigns chased Brock Lesnar back to the UFC, and that's the last we're going to hear from him and blah, blah, blah. And I think they just don't want to mention him when he's not there. You know, I mean, they barely mentioned him when he was there a lot of times. So I don't think they're going to want to draw attention to him just because he's not part of the current product.
Yeah, I think if he were to beat Cormier, like all of a sudden, it would be this big thing that they would suddenly.
Oh, yeah.
And it was weird. Remember going back to 200, they didn't acknowledge his fight until the day of the weigh-ins. Then suddenly right. WWE.com aired the weigh-ins and aired the press conferences and all this. It's weird how they seem to still be in that Monday Night War mentality very selectively, where they they'll just not acknowledge something so overtly. I thought it was weird that they didn't acknowledge the Cormier fight until really the last couple of weeks. What do you think in general about this fight and even the Rousey Bliss fight? What do you think about UFC and Dana White being essentially like a storyline tool right now in the UFC? Did you like the usage of them just sort of being these monolithic characters that are part of the overall narrative?
Well, I think it's you kind of have to do it out of necessity. I mean, to acknowledge Ronda Rousey and her prowess in the ring without acknowledging her MMA background in concert with her judo background would just be disingenuous. I mean, and you know, I'm not saying that WWE is above being disingenuous at all, but it doesn't make sense. You know, that's who these guys are, right? Both Rousey and Lesnar. Rousey, of course, to a greater extent. But I think you almost you kind of have to acknowledge where they come from and their accomplishments, just to, if nothing else, to explain why they're so dominant in WWE. So it makes no sense for them to not acknowledge where Ronda Rousey came from, and then for her to go in there and squash Alexa Bliss, you know, when everybody else, you know, no one else seems to be able to do that. And then she comes in there and just rolls through her. You know, why is she able to do that? Well, it's because of this and this and this. So I think that's where that kind of comes from.
Yeah, but the current doesn't equally flow both ways. If you think about it, the UFC is a tool used to enhance WWE storylines and enhance, you know, you can enhance Roman's victory by say he beat the former UFC champion. When you go into the UFC context, beating a WWE guy is almost like, well, of course you better have done that. Or it's kind of funny how it doesn't work the same way. At the same time, though, no matter what anybody says outside of a McGregor, who, you know, basically does pro wrestling in a shoot style, all the biggest fights always have some WWE connection. So, you know, they're not given the respect in that sense, but, you know, so much of UFC doesn't even exist without WWE. You know, their late 2000s boom with Brock Lesnar isn't such a big thing if not for WWE. And so it's always – it hangs over the UFC, excuse me, in almost like a more negative way. Like it's begrudging that the UFC has to acknowledge pro wrestling, whereas the WWE can selectively acknowledge UFC and use it to enhance their own agenda. So, you know, it's just the genesis of these two genres that keeps — you would think by this point they'd be so far away from each other, and yet they're as close as they've been in so many years. And I know that's why we have this show, because the two are so interlinked these days that it's just amazing. It's fun, and it makes I get entertained by it. I like the fact that now you see the UFC fighters taking selfies with WWE guys and acknowledging them a little bit more, and the walls aren't up so tightly. So that, I think that's a net positive over what we had a couple of years ago. Let's talk about the other figures in this main event, more wrestling centric. We'll go, what's up with Paul Heyman? Like, what do we do with Paul Heyman now? He's such a valuable part of the TV show, even if he's kind of been phoning it in for about a year and a half, I would say. We haven't had that great Paul Heyman promo really in a while, even though we've had a lot of really good stuff. And even last Monday, we had some good stuff from Heyman. Are we going to see Heyman again? Or was that also the farewell to Paul last night?
I hope we see him again. I think he's a valuable enough resource to get people over. Like, if he's invested in what he's doing, he's tremendous. You know, I mean, of course, the counterexample to that would be, you know, with when he was with Cesaro and stuff like that. But I mean, when you put Paul Heyman with someone and give him when you give him the freedom to do what he thinks he can do with someone, I mean, you're basically giving him free rein to get a guy over. So I think to not have him around would be unfortunate. You know, I don't know what the current power dynamic is with him between him and Triple H and Stephanie McMahon and all that kind of stuff. I know there's obviously been some tension, to say the least, over the years between those guys. But, you know, I mean, he's if nothing else, he is a valuable on-air talent, even if he's not as palatable behind the scenes.
Are you saying he's possibly hard to get along with and can be grating to the people in power?
I would never insinuate such a thing.
Yeah, I think that's what plays a bigger role in all of this with Heyman. I think it's just that he's difficult. People who like Heyman will admit that he's difficult to get along with and you know, has this very loose relationship with the truth and is so controlling and domineering over everything he does. Like you, I certainly hope he does stick around and they find something for him. I think, though, we've seen when you talk about like Cesaro and Ryback and Curtis Axel, he doesn't have this magic wand to just make anything good. You know, he's not like Bobby Heenan in that sort of sense. He is this top-tier act that has to be with other top-tier acts that are already established. That's why he worked well with Brock Lesnar and with CM Punk. So it's a delicate balance. You know, people always talk about putting him with Rousey, which I don't think is necessary. Rousey, as we discussed last week, cannot talk. Like, is just really bad at speaking. With that said, I think it feels too much like a retread to just, okay, we have the other MMA champ, let's put Heyman with her. I don't think that makes a ton of sense. And I think even though Heyman can get cheers and can be a great face, there is a natural heelishness to Heyman in general. Like, Heyman's unlikable in many, many ways, as we have just laid out. I think he's got to go with one of the top guys. And if the timing's not right, then maybe he does go away for a while. But much like Lesnar, I think we might be at a point where it's not this bitter divorce from the company the way it was in 2006. I don't think he got fired on the airplane last night the way he did back in the day. So if he's still around, I think that's a good thing. I'm more and more curious to see when an MMA company is fully going to leverage the talents of a Paul Heyman. You know, he's worked sort of peripherally with the UFC and with some other companies, and he's a guy that definitely he may not know how to run a business, but he knows how to promote. And I would just think him in behind the scenes, like with a UFC right now, would just be a perfect marriage. I think it's hard to put him in front of the camera in any way because now he's such a big personality as the character Paul Heyman. That's kind of, you know, maybe you're blurring the lines a little too much. But I would love to see him working in MMA in some capacity. Would you like to see that, or do you think that's ever going to happen?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you go back to Brock Lesnar's first fight with Frank Mir, you know, Paul Heyman didn't have a ton of involvement there, but they had him on air a couple times, you know, talking about Brock Lesnar. I think he's very effective in that role. You know, it's not like it's that much different from what he does in pro wrestling. It's just a matter of, you know, tweaking what he does a little bit more. And he's able to do that. I mean, if you let him be a mouthpiece, I mean, if you look at it this way, it's not much different than having Joe Rogan and Jimmy Smith do, you know, their little talking head parts in the video intros and stuff like that. Paul Heyman could totally do that kind of thing. You know, you wouldn't want him necessarily breaking down fights like they do, but it's a similar dynamic. You know, he can, if you don't think Paul Heyman can sell a fight, I mean, give me a break. You know, he can absolutely sell a fight. Paul Heyman can sell. He's a salesman. You know, he's an advocate, but an advocate is a salesman. So that's I think there's value to be had there. Whether he's taken seriously is another question. But at the same time, if you put him in there, you know, let him be the mouthpiece for someone who doesn't necessarily want to talk, like a Stipe Miocic or something like that. I think that'd be very valuable. Even if he's just coaching guys on talking, even if he's not going to be on air. You know, you don't want to put him on the screen or whatever. That's fine. I think he'd be valuable in just coaching guys on how to talk and just subtle ways to sell themselves more without being quite so bombastic as like a Chael Sonnen or a Colby Covington or what have you. You know, there's ways to be in that middle ground. And I think Paul Heyman could be valuable in teaching guys how to do that.
Yeah, I think we're a lot closer than we are further away of an era where MMA fighters actively take like promo class and take.
Why wouldn't they?
I don't know.
You'd be very wise to do so. I mean, it's very apparent at this point, and it's always been apparent that fighting is only part of the game. You know, it's a huge part. It's the biggest part, but it's not the only part. You know, you've got to be able to sell yourself if you're going to get to that next level. So, I mean, they'd be wise to do whatever they can to be able to more effectively sell themselves.
Yeah, and I think it's always been this thing, like we've talked about even a few times on this show, is, oh, you got to distance yourself from the pro wrestling side. But as we said, aside maybe from a George St. Pierre, everybody who's ever been a big draw could cut a pro wrestling promo. That's just always been the case in MMA for, you know, three decades now. That is, you know, for every era from the Tito Ortiz's to, you know, all these guys, even more recently with Conor McGregor and Ronda Rousey, they were all really good promos. So I would love to see an apparatus in place for these guys to go to, so it doesn't come off so unnatural, because that's the era we're in now.
Right.
We're in the McGregor parody era of MMA trash talk, where everyone just kind of tries to be McGregor. And if it doesn't really fit your personality, it's like the scripted promos in WWE. It just doesn't come across well. So I definitely want to see that improved upon in MMA. And I think if anybody would be a catalyst to getting that, I think Paul Heyman. As long as you just don't put Paul Heyman in charge of the books, I think Paul Heyman is such a valuable asset.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the other two parts of the main event. It's weird that there's so many people involved in a one-on-one match. There's so many different characters. First, let's talk about Strowman. Here's a fun guy who, like this time last year, seemed to have like the world at the tip of his fingers, and he's still very close to the top. But I said last week I felt like there's something slightly missing. Was last night the restart for Braun Strowman?
You know, I don't know, because Braun Strowman had one purpose last night, from his squash to when he showed up for the main event. That purpose was to soften the boos for Roman Reigns, and that's what he did. You know, his purpose was not to get over in any sense of the word. It was not to to start a push for him. It was so that Roman Reigns would not get quite so mercilessly booed. And that's what he did. I mean, you know, they brought him out there and Brock Lesnar beat him up to get heat. And then Roman Reigns pinned the guy who beat up Braun Strowman. And that's why he got, you know, kind of a less heated reaction. You might even say he got cheered. So, you know, it's like I was saying last night, you know, for all their flaws, WWE, every once in a while, every several years, does a really solid job of not getting their top babyface booed out of the building.
Yeah, the fact that they're self-aware is both a good and a bad thing, in that they're self-aware that something's going wrong, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I have a problem, but I'm not willing to fix it. I'm just going to put a Band-Aid on it. Yeah, how demoralizing does that have to be? Like, that's like the real-world experience of applying for a promotion at your work, not getting it, but having to train the guy that got it to do the job. That feels like the wrestling version of that. How demoralizing that, like, you're not going to be the one that's going to get the title. You're not going to get the big celebration at the end, but you're going to be the one that the fans actually like. So we're just going to put you out there as a prop to deflect from the guy who we're putting over. That's just gotta be an awful place to be in. So hopefully he's getting compensated pretty well for that role. And I think it's kind of hard because it's weird at the top. I would say, like, part of the reason why, we'll talk about this later, SmackDown, besides it only being 2 hours and it's got, you know, the fun indie guys or former indie guys are on that show. But part of the reason why I think that show is better is because you have good guys and bad guys.
Yeah.
Very clearly outlined. If they're going to go right to Roman and Strowman, well, that's great because, you know, you want to make sure Roman doesn't get a single cheer in the whole feud. Well, there you go. Put him against the most popular babyface. And they do that with Roman a lot. And I think it's part of the way of saying, oh, yeah, it's the 50-50 reactions. Put him against another ambiguous character, which doesn't really, I think, serve him very well at all. But the other problem is in general, there's not really heels in pro wrestling that can actually wrestle or that are entertaining. Like, the only way you can get actual heat is to just be Jinder and not be good at wrestling. But then you have like a Jinder and Roman match that just, you know, puts everybody to sleep. So, Part of the problem is more institutional in that there's not great heels for Roman to work with. But yeah, that it's cool that, like, you know, you're going to have Strowman maybe at the top, and that's where people want him to be. But I think it does hurt that those characters are kind of ambiguous in the way that they go about things. Let's talk about Mr. Roman Reigns, the luckiest and unluckiest guy in wrestling history. You know, in that, like, I don't think a promotion has ever believed in a top guy, no matter what, in the way that, like, Vince believes Seriously. In Roman. At the same time, I don't know if there was a top guy that was ever as poorly received, and that's true and it isn't true. Like, there's guys like Luger and Diesel and stuff that, you know, they were there and the fans maybe didn't really take to it, but then they were moved out of that spot. Roman just has to stay in the spot and take whatever comes out of him, because Vince isn't gonna move him from there. But I think now, knock on wood, we're in the Roman era again. I think we were kind of in it post WrestleMania 32, but then the dang little drug testing always has to get in the way of everybody's fun, as that tends to happen in both wrestling and MMA. But I think now we're in the restart. We're in the Roman era. How do you think it's gonna go?
You know, it's an interesting question, and if nothing else, I want to see what happens tonight. You know, I've not been watching the product like I have in times past, you know, because of the specter of Roman Reigns, as I put it, hanging over kind of the whole product for me. But tonight is going to be interesting, because I want to see, number one, how badly he gets booed in the same building in which he was not booed that badly last night. And I want to see what they do with him next, because to me, a lot of the issue with why Raw in particular has been so hard for me to watch is because the chase for Roman Reigns has been so unpalatable. So with him having now ended the chase, you know, is it quite so hanging over everything as it was before? Or is it just like, okay, well, I don't like the champion, but everything else is kind of a little bit better now? Because before it was kind of, you know, Roman at the expense of everybody else. So now, are they going to be able to concentrate on other stuff, or are they still going to be concentrating on, you know, how do we keep Roman Reigns from not looking so terrible every time he comes out there? You know, so that's interesting to me. And I just don't know what they're going to do with it. I mean, like you said, if they put him with Strowman, I just can't think of anything worse besides maybe putting him with Seth Rollins. You know, it's a matter of, you know, are they going to just line up a bunch of minor heels for him to take care of and not worry about the fact that it's not going to be very hot programs, and just hope that organically he gets more popular as a babyface? Or are they, you know, or they get worried that's going to lead to apathy and they're just going to put him with the hottest guys and, you know, reactions be damned. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. My instinct tells me that they're going to put him with guys that are over and hotter, make hotter programs. But to me, that just makes it less and less watchable. You know, I can't enjoy having a guy pushed that way as a babyface and being continually told, well, the louder the reaction, the better. We don't mind if they're cheering or booing, which is just the biggest load of crap I've ever heard in my life.
I hate that. I hate that so much.
Yeah, it's awful.
It's driven me crazy. And because it applies to some situations, but it does not apply to this situation. And that drives me so crazy.
Yeah, it's demonstrably not true, or else they wouldn't have done what they did last night with trying to get him less booed.
Right. And by using that logic, then they basically have the fan base kind of over a barrel permanently now. Like, you can never.
Yeah, exactly.
You are completely irrelevant to the product, and we've talked about that before, that maybe, you know, Vince is not booking for an audience, he's booking for a boardroom, be that as it may. I don't think people in the boardroom really care one way or the other who's on top, as long as there is money being made. So that's what, and I do, there is, one day we'll do a podcast and we'll explore the very real argument that their business, as far as, you know, live event attendance and these big shows, isn't going down with Roman on top. So there, but all that means to me is that, like, there's not this grand incentive to change it. That has nothing to do with the artistic quality of what's going on. And because they do, as a company, present a really, really entertaining product to, I think, a demographic that you and I are, you know, parts of, and people younger and a little bit older than us that really were into the product at one point in their lives, and they've done enough to keep us all there. That has nothing to do with Roman. That is, that is, that is the, that credit there goes to their their marketing department, their media, the way they do the network, the way they've set up NXT, the way they've their Triple H's talent evaluation, all those deserve very high praise. None of that has anything to do with Roman. It's not Steve Austin where, you know, the thing was going down and Raw was nearly canceled and then they put him on top and suddenly they're the biggest cultural force in entertainment. That's not what's happening here. But with this idea of, oh, well, as long as he's getting a reaction, then you're going to, you know, we're going to do the thing. Well, then they're basically daring you not to watch is what that is.
Exactly.
And they're holding it over your head because, well, you know, maybe we don't like Roman or you don't, but man, I really like Seth, so I'm going to keep watching. And then, you know, the purchase unit just goes toward credit towards Roman. That is such a ridiculous thing. And I'm tired of hearing about it. I'm tired of hearing this defeatist thing that there's just nothing that can be done about it. I'm not even necessarily a Roman hater myself. I actually maybe even consider myself a bit of a Roman fan. I think he's been dealt a bit of a bad hand by both management and the crowd. But it's not a good presentation. If we're judging this as a presentation, the guy that is built to get over as the top good guy, and then there's a booing crowd, that's a big disconnect. That's like a picture that's incomplete, that's using the wrong colors to paint this artistic thing. I'm stealing Zach's gimmick here by making so many art references. But I think the point is well taken that, like, it's just not enjoyable when the top face is getting booed. And I always say this, and I'll qualify this a million times, and it's a different way than Cena. And there's a few reasons for that, and they probably shouldn't have done it with Cena, to be honest with you. They shouldn't have done it with Cena.
Because they shouldn't have.
But it still was fun. Like, booing Cena was was still fun. It was, but maybe it was, like, the age I was in my life, you know, your early 20s, and it's like your rebellious stage, and you're gonna do what you're going to do. But you got the Rob Van Dam match out of it. You got the CM Punk match out of it. There was some value to it. Again, they probably shouldn't have done it. But it just drags the product so down because what you're watching just doesn't have a big resonance. That's my Roman rant for the year. I think as a Torch podcaster, you have to put one big Roman rant in for the year. So I'm glad I got that out of the way. Any final thoughts on this main event?
No, I mean, I think we've probably said enough at this point. You know, we're pretty deep into the show and haven't gotten past the main event yet. So I think we'll leave it where it is.
All right. So if I need to calm my nerves after going on one of these epic Roman Reigns rants that is my right and responsibility as a Torch podcaster, I'm going to sit back, I'm going to do some stretching, I'm going to take a deep breath, and I'm going to enjoy a bottle of Wink wine. Let me tell you about Wink. That's W-I-N-C. What Wink does is it makes it easy to discover great wine. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched just to your taste, personalized for you, ship right to your door, and it starts at just $13 a bottle. That's a really great value. You know, there's nothing like coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine selected just for you. It's the best day of your month. Last night was the best night of Vince's month by far, but when he gets his bottle of Wink, that'll be an even better day next month. And all he'll have to do is fill out Wink's palate profile quiz and answer some simple questions that the average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee, and how do you feel about blueberries? Then what Wink does, they send wines that are curated just to your taste. The more wines you rate, the more personalized each monthly selection becomes. And each month, there's a bunch of delicious new wines, like the insanely popular Summer Water Rose. There's no membership fees, you can skip any month and cancel any time. And best of all, shipping is absolutely covered. And if you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll replace it with a bottle you'll love, no questions asked. You don't like the Roman Reigns you're being fed? They'll send you a Braun Strowman. They're not like WWE. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/pwtorch and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/pwtorch for $20 off. trywink.com/pwtorch. Sean, let's go to a break, and when we come back on the other side, let's talk about the other former UFC champion that competed last night.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
you want to get in on this exciting conversation about Roman Reigns and other assorted things, send us an email, MMALivecast@gmail.com. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. Okay, Sean. The other UFC champion that competed last night actually won her match. And that would be one Ronda Rousey taking out A Bliss. I won't use her first name. That goes very wrong in my living room. But you can fill in the blanks there. You know who she is if you're listening to this show. In a 4-minute, another one of the squash matches of the night, but this is more of a, I would say, an elongated squash match, the way that she toyed with her, talked a bunch of trash, had some really, really interesting eye makeup, to say the least. I think she was joining like a goth band in the 90s, the way that Ronda was dressed last night. Yeah, it was just
terrible.
It didn't connect in a weird way. I get what they were trying to go for, but it just didn't work. Be that
I don't know that I get what they were trying to go for, but go ahead.
No, yeah, well, yeah, that's very true. Maybe that's a better way of phrasing that. Good idea, Sean. It's the abstractness got me, I guess. I was thinking it was something else that it wasn't. See, our expectations are just completely warped. Up is down, cold is hot. That's what this podcast has turned into today. Nevertheless, Ronda Rousey is the new Raw Women's Champion. This is her, you know, her third or fourth match, her third singles match on television. I think her fourth match overall on television. She's had some house show matches. And like I said, this really barely qualifies for a match because it was really just her chasing Miss Bliss around and building up to the big arm lock spot and with the tap out at the big celebration after the fact. How do you think Ronda did here?
I thought she did fine. I mean, I said it last night and we were talking about it on Twitter a little bit, you and I, but I can't get into Ronda Rousey. And I, you know, and actually Jason Amati called this out when I said that. I think the original thing that I was asking was, am I the only one that prefers Alexa Bliss to Ronda Rousey? And what Jason said was, you might feel differently if you didn't know her from MMA. And that's a fair point. That may be true, but I just, I can't get into her character, which is, I have a decent sense that her character is just her, and she just kind of bugs me, you know, and it's nothing personal. I just, you know, the talking incessantly throughout the match was bothersome. The scowling to me, it just feels inauthentic, even though I know that's her thing. Everything just feels like put on, you know, it's too much for me. And I know, you know, I'm not going to say that she's not, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, she's definitely capable in the ring, especially for someone who's been doing it not very long. She's credible, you know, that's for sure. But it's her act is just not clicking with me. And I don't know if, you know, that I may be on an island here. I mean, obviously she gets tremendous reactions from the crowd. But I'm just not a fan of the act. I prefer Alexa Bliss. I prefer a lot of the other women on the roster to Ronda Rousey. But, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm 100% right on that. It's just my preference, you know, whereas with Roman Reigns, it's kind of a different situation with how he's presented. But she did fine, you know, especially given how short a time she's been, you know, wrestling in general and especially wrestling in front of a camera. You know, I think she's doing a real nice job. It's just the act that for me, I don't like it. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I'm really glad Rick Monsey's not on the podcast this week because the two of you would be just, you know, destroying me. Because I'm dying to know what his thoughts are on the Ronda match. And he's Twitterless, so we actually won't know that.
Right.
Maybe we speak to him next week. Last night was weird. Like, I think she did a good job in what she was doing. But it was like last night was the
– it feels like a middle school play.
Yeah, it was the crossover between – if you were to make a wrestler, like what would, like, think of the MMA fighter, Ronda Rousey, what would she be if she was a pro wrestler? Like, we didn't already have sort of a body of evidence of what that was. That was like Ronda Rousey playing pro wrestler, I thought, in a lot of ways last night. Like, talking the trash and just laying it on, like, super thick, where it was like, you know, shush, I'm trying to watch the match here, I was thinking as I was watching it. With that said, I think she does like I said, have the aptitude for this just naturally. I think she definitely has the physical side. And even with the makeup and the things she was doing, I think what we've come to notice with Ronda is she's one of the few celebrity athletes that's come into wrestling and has just been able to kind of be so giving of herself. And what I mean by that is, like, you know, they talk about how a lot of these amateur wrestlers have trouble taking back bumps because they don't like, you know, being on their back. It's an unnatural position for even like guys like Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. They would have trouble, you know, getting them to be giving in the ring because, you know, it's just as a competitive athlete, it's something that's not natural. And I think Ronda lets people influence what she does, unless these are all her own ideas. But, you know, she's willing to kind of give whatever it is a try. And I think that's something that's very unique to her that wasn't unique to other athletes, other celebrities that have come into pro wrestling over the years. So she deserves credit for that. It worked for what it needed to be. And again, it's the opposite of the Roman Reigns thing, even though we're making the same point, but it's a completely different type of scenario. For what it needed to be is you don't want her wrestling too long. You don't want her exposed. Alexa Bliss, I think, is a very competent wrestler, but she's not the one that's going to carry a rookie, I think, to a 15-minute classic. Right. So you played on everybody. This is more of that Paul Heyman type of thing where you accentuate the strengths and downplay everybody's weaknesses. And so it worked for – they got done what they needed to get done, and it wasn't a trick the way that, like, the Reigns-Lesnar thing is more of like a scam that's being pulled over you. This is just accentuating the strengths and downplaying the weaknesses. So I thought worked great. What did you think of the heel reaction that Travis Brown got in Barclays?
I thought it was hilarious. I mean, that's kind of the funny thing.
Travis Brown is, right? No. They're just booing him because he's Ronda's husband, right?
I don't know. I mean, it's given the crowd, they may know who he is, or at least some of them may know. It may have started with the people who know who he is and then continued with the rest of everybody. Oh, we're booing this guy? All right. But I thought it was pretty hilarious. But the funny thing is, it's like when you look at Ronda Rousey outside of when she's wrestling, everything else she does doesn't jive with a babyface character. If you look at Saturday night when she was out in the NXT crowd cheering on Shayna Baszler, who is the biggest heel on the women's side.
That is so stupid that they do that. Again, I'm not Wade Keller, where I'm not thinking everything needs to always fill in that heel face thing, but right. It's like your big one of the biggest heels of the whole company is Shayna Baszler. Yes. Like, as far as like just being, you know, an irredeemable person. Why would you have biggest face in the whole company cheer her on? Yeah, go ahead, Sean. But yeah, I hate that.
No, it's true. I mean, you were right on with it. And you know, out there making fun of Kairi Sane, which in and of itself was hilarious, what she was saying. She was like, did you catch the comments she made from the crowd?
No, I didn't.
she said, that wheel doesn't even do anything. She's not a real pirate. which just really, as I saw it.
Not inaccurate.
Like as I saw it, I'm like, did she really just say that? Because that's some high level trash talk right there. You're not a real pirate. Like, yeah, we know.
You're not a real boy.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh gosh. But yeah. So that was you know, just another thing with Ronda Rousey that just doesn't sit right with me for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's funny. When she was in the middle of her MMA run, I wish I was writing about MMA at the time because I couldn't stand her one bit. And I always felt like such the lone voice. And now I say that and people just think, oh, yeah, I'm sure that's easy to say now. There's I have no evidence other than if you talk to people that I talked to at that time to say that. Yeah. But I just think all those quirks, once she lost her fights, all those things just came to be exposed.
It all came to the surface. Yep.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. Now that she's in pro wrestling, where she's generally cheered and well liked, but those things just still come out. And it's just, and part of that's what I like her when she's a great athlete that was never meant to be a jock, is how I've always thought. Like, she's athletically talented and a very hardworking person, but
she's socially awkward.
Yeah, I was like, she would be like, I always think like, yeah, she would be my friend, not Roman Reigns' friend in real life.
Yes.
Like that. And that's, and you know, she talks about, you know, even the political candidates she supports and the TV shows she's interested in, and she liked wrestling. I mean, that's like, doesn't get much more socially inadequate than being a big wrestling fan, as we all know. And that's always, I thought maybe to read so deeply and be an armchair psychologist, like, that's kind of always the cognitive dissonance that happens with her, is that she's this dominant athlete, but she's really not, that's not really who she is as a person. And so I love the fact of her trying to, you know, dog on Kairi Sane's wheel. That's like something, though, a great heel manager would say. Or like even like Bobby Heenan. Hill, even
that's a Bobby Heenan line. Yes. You're not even a real pirate.
It's not a kilt, it's a skirt.
You come out here with your fake wheel. I don't know who you're trying to fool. That doesn't do anything.
That made my day, Sean. I really want to. And I've watched that match twice, and I did not catch that either.
That wheel probably didn't even come off a real ship. You had it custom made.
She's gonna request like the blueprint credentials from Kairi Sane. Okay, before Ronda talk completely goes off the rails, it may be much too late for that. As watching the match, though, I was watching it, I was thinking, this is fun and this is cool, but now I'm like ready to actually watch Ronda Rousey wrestle. And I don't know if she's at that point yet, but I'm thinking, how do you do it, though? Because I was thinking about, well, she had the match with lots of smoke and mirrors with Stephanie and Angle and Triple H, and you're sitting there with two Hall of Fame level talents, one really good performer in Stephanie, and so they were able to do that. And then against Nia, I thought she did good, but she was just there to get beaten up, which she did a very good job at, but they did that thing, and then she was there to beat up Alicia Fox and Bliss, but those were that type of match. How do you make it so she actually has a back-and-forth match? And when I kind of realized that, well, she hasn't really faced legitimate competition yet in a kayfabe sense. Like, I'm ready for her to face Charlotte. I'm ready for her to face Asuka if she's still a thing. I'm ready for her to face Becky. I'm ready for that. Do you think they're booking her too dominant? Are they getting into that Brock Lesnar problem where there's almost such a gap between how she appears to make anything interesting for her? Or are they doing a good job by having her only squash these people that aren't highly regarded already?
Yeah, I think they've done what they had to do as far as booking her to squash everybody. I mean, I don't see how you do it any other way with who she's faced thus far. The only way she's going to be getting a credible match is with Natalya or with Asuka or something like that. I think they'd do well probably to turn Asuka heel. I think you're going to have a hard time turning Natty heel right now, given the recent passing of Jim Neidhart. But I think Asuka is a pretty easy heel turn. You know, I think she'll the thing with an Asuka heel turn, and I'm sorry for my stuttering, but the thing about an Asuka heel turn is I can see it going similarly to a Nakamura heel turn, where like I think she can have a pretty cool heel character, and it will probably get over pretty well. But I think that's a good style matchup and a good personality matchup between Asuka and Ronda Rousey. So I mean, just talking about it, I'm like, ooh, yeah, that's pretty good. So I that's what I'd be most interested in, I think.
Yeah, I think Asuka's a good kind of next-ish opponent for her in a lot of ways. Like you said, she could be heel. Even her NXT character was kind of a jerk. Like, that was kind of what Asuka was. Like, she was better than you and knew it. And so, like, that's what she was, she was real mean to Ember Moon and to Bayley and that. So I think I think that's not that hard to do. And I think from a stylistic perspective, they have sort of booked Ronda as an overall martial artist. Even I guess they never watched any of her fights to know what happens whenever she tries to box or kickbox with an opponent. But in her fights, she does do a lot of those kind of martial arts type striking, which Asuka very much has in her arsenal, and the armbar, which is part of Asuka's whole deal. So I think, kind of like you did with the Nia Jackson, is you could really tell a story based on what's going to happen in the match, you know, in the mechanics of the match. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to her really getting physical with these other wrestlers. And most of the good women wrestlers, I guess because Sasha and Bayley don't just exist in this other alternate universe nowadays, are kind of on SmackDown. So I feel like the big matches for her would be reaching across the aisle with those workers. How worried were you last night that we were going to get the lead into a Bella Twins versus Ronda Rousey feud?
I was very concerned.
I was too. I was like, oh no. Like, this is what they're going to do. And they're going to justify it in so many ways.
Yep. And at this point, I'm not unconcerned, but I was very concerned last night.
But I think last night you accomplished what the goal of that would have been. I think you got that done last night. You had Natty, and you had the people who are celebrities in a, you know, from the E! Channel and from the TV shows. So then if you're following them on the social media, you can see that, and there's, oh, the big celebrity Ronda Rousey. So I think they got what they needed out of it. The Ballet Twins are great, though, in a way that they, like, lord over the women's division in a weird way. Like, oh, yes. You know, they're back, and there's this really, you know, they somehow became stars without telling anybody that watches wrestling that they're good wrestlers.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
And I do watch the show. I actually love the show with the Total Ballet.
Oh, man.
This is
where we part ways.
I love it because I love jerk John Cena, and I love, like, and I love troll Daniel Bryan. And Big Johnny's
that part I can see.
Like, the Bellas are the most uninteresting part of the show. They're not very interesting. It's all the peripheral characters that me and my wife sit down and have a good laugh at. But on that show, they totally super. If you only watch that show, you would think the Bellas were like Steamboat and Savage the way they present them on that show and their star power. They are stars. I'm not saying that they're not stars, but they're presented as something else. And somehow that transferred over into WWE television, where we're just like told that they're this big deal. And like we know, like the whole idea of the women's revolution is that you got to get the Bellas off TV. Like that, they are the catalyst to all this. They're pioneers. That's like, you know. I don't know a good example. You know, how do you say something's pioneer? You know, I don't even know the analogy I'm trying to view. But the whole reason why people wanted a women's revolution is because the Bellas were wrestling, not because the Bellas were doing such good things in the ring that it demanded and facilitated change. Like, that's just a really weird backwards narrative that they've framed.
It is very strange. Yes.
Poor Paige. That's all I got to say about that.
Poor
the
Paige.
Person who actually did kind of that.
I know.
Can pick as the catalyst to this whole thing. She is very much the Daniel Bryan figure in that, like, the main roster changed after Daniel Bryan and his thing. But for years, he didn't really get to reap the benefits of having all those indie wrestlers on the roster.
Yeah.
But at least he does now. Let's move away from our MMA topics. Let's quickly go through other highlights from the show. Let's talk about Miz and Daniel Bryan. Did it live up to the hype, exceed the hype, or go right at the hype?
Well, you know, it's funny. I had very different expectations going into this match. I thought that it was going to be more of a blow-off, but it seems like it's kind of a beginning, which I'm cool with, because I thought they had a really good match. You know, I mean, there's only, I don't think you're going to get the top level from a Miz match, but I mean, that being said, I don't mean that as much of a slight to Miz, because he was really good here. I mean, Daniel Bryan beat the crap out of him with a lot of those strikes, and you know, and he did really well too. I mean, this was a hard hitting match, and it was a lot of fun. And I think, you know, going into, like, I mean, we've got Hell in a Cell coming up. I think that's a no brainer. AJ Styles, Samoa Joe is another one that's a no brainer for Hell in a Cell. It's going to be a lot of fun with this feud going forward. And these two just play off of each other so well. That I think you can't lose by continuing this. And, you know, as long as they end it in a timely fashion and don't make it drag on too long, I think this is going to be, you know, every match that they have, every interaction that they have is going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I wish somebody would have told the crowd at Barclays to pay attention to the match, because
what a crappy crowd last night.
They really were. And I always say that I say this all the time, that Chicago is my favorite smart crowd. Because they're not the hooligans of Philly.
Yeah.
And they're not the wannabe wanting to be ironic that California and New York are. That's why I always say Chicago is kind of the best of the bunch. But last night, they were just weird last night. And during that match, I get it. It's a long show, and we've talked about this being a long show, but they just were not going to be into that type of match last night at all. Well, that was kind of that plot.
And here's the thing. You know, and we kind of go back to this a lot, but I'm going to hit it one more time here. And this is the fault of WWE. I mean, when you look at the TakeOver crowd from the NXT show the night before, they were into that show because they were into the storylines and they were into the characters, with one notable exception, but we won't go there right this second. But when you look at SummerSlam, they don't take the main roster product as seriously, you know, and it's just a byproduct of how it's presented to me. You know, I don't think that they incentivize the crowd to take it seriously. And then you end up with a crowd like this, who's like, you know, you get a serious good feud between The Miz and Daniel Bryan, and people are not as into it as they could be if they were taking the product more seriously.
Right, and it's not like there's just a completely different audience. I mean, I'm sure there's,
right,
there's
exactly.
some turnover, but it's not even like WrestleMania where one's in the basketball arena and one's in the football stadium. Mm-hmm. This is literally the same building.
It's the same arena,
so,
yeah.
So, you know, there's not that big turnover. With that said, though, I like echo your sentiments. I thought it was a really good match, and you know, the old adage of told a really good story. That really was a good story the way it was being told, and I really wish Max Landis wasn't like disgraced nowadays, because he could really do something with the narrative of how Miz and Bryan really are two different sides of the state. You know, they have a weird parallel as they come up, but they use different avenues to get where they are, and they're perceived differently because of that. There's a lot of layers. Some of it by design and some of it just, you know, happy coincidence between these two guys. You know, they're kind of the same age, the same size, married within the company to people you remember from 5 years ago. They have so many parallels. And even as I'm watching Miz, and I'm a big Miz defender, and you're right, he just can't have the match that like Roderick Strong would be able to have,
right,
with Daniel Bryan. Right. But he does fine. Like, he rarely has a stinker match, I think, in the last few years.
Yeah, well, that's just it. He did well, did really well. But it's just it's never going to be that elite level match.
You can say the same thing on the indie level with a guy like Cody. Like, it's the same sort
absolutely.
Of thing. It's
just, absolutely.
But but like Cody, the character work is so strong.
Makes up for it.
I was thinking, I was like, man, Miz is in a weird way. Miz is kind of like the new generation Triple H in a certain sense, is that like he's very competent at what he does, but sometimes his matches, if they just go long, they're gonna bore you just a little bit, but he's just kind of a constant. I was like, huh, I'm like the only idiot that's ever gonna think that the Miz and Triple H are very similar, but I was like, yeah, they kind of have some parallels to like mid-2000s Triple H to what like the Miz is right now. Match of the night for me, though, I thought was Samoa Joe and AJ Styles with maybe an asterisk towards the opener. We'll talk about that in a minute. I thought Joe and Styles, despite having a slower match, maybe that's where the crowd kind of died because there was so much going on in this. I thought they did awesome in this match. The way they built to the crescendo, and with Joe calling out AJ's wife, and then AJ snapping, which is, you know, natural, the human reaction, the way he did. My son was watching, wanting AJ to kill everybody around him, which I thought was, I always judge stuff off of my 8-year-old son, because I that's like their target demo. So I'm like, okay, did that work? Did that not work? But you know, AJ really showing that fire. What'd you think of this? Was it all good in this match?
Oh yeah, it was tremendous. That was also my match of the night. I thought it was really good. And I think you said it all there. I mean, it was really the perfect, kind of like Daniel Bryan and Miz, it was the perfect first match for the series. It was great. Really good.
Yeah, again, Raw, it felt like this was like the end of the storylines for Raw and the beginning for all the SmackDown story, or the first chapter in the SmackDown storylines. So I'm really looking forward to SmackDown in the fall. They kind of have everything that you really want to sink your teeth into, at least defined thus far. The last match we'll talk about here on our mini review, it was the opener, as is the case for 2018. Seth Rollins comes out and has a great match with Dolph Ziggler. I thought it was really, really good. Really good time. The crowd totally into it. Ambrose and McIntyre. No heel turn for Ambrose, which I am a fan of. I'm on the not turn Ambrose heel bandwagon at the moment.
Same.
I just think, like, we're always talking about fighting against the current of the crowd with Roman Reigns. Don't say that and then also advocate for Dean to be turned, because
exactly. Let the crowd enjoy guys that they like for a little while.
And that's part of why the Seth thing has worked so well, is that he's a babyface that the crowd's really into.
Yes.
Like, that's just, you know, what a novel concept that's.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Who'd have thunk it? And I think that's why. And he works with heels, unlike even AJ, who's kind of, you know, will work like a Rusev and such, so or a Kevin Owens for so long that people really, really like. So I think it's worked well for Seth. And yeah, I'm not a fan of turning Dean. And I'm thinking, wow, Seth deserves so much credit that he basically revived three guys' careers with this one program. Ambrose's career wasn't on the fritz, but he came back and maximized his pop, I think, by being associated with Seth. Dolph Ziggler, who, you know, Wade Keller's favorite punching bag, Dolph Ziggler, really, he's at like a whole different level now than the way you think of him, than the way you would have thought of him 6 or 8 months as this glorified jobber. And unlike a guy like Lashley, who's come back to such a dud, McIntyre hasn't done a whole lot, but yet is super interesting. I think Seth really deserves credit for a lot of this.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Dolph Ziggler may still be an annoying promo most of the time, but he can go in the ring, man. And when you get him in there with a guy like Seth Rollins, that's a really fun match.
Yeah, he's another guy that people like, but he's just, as a heel, he makes so much more sense. Unlike I said, how Ronda would probably be my friend, I don't think I would ever be friends with Dolph Ziggler. He just seems like the most annoying guy at every party, probably.
Well, that's the thing. When you look at these two matches, these three matches, really, Rollins, Ziggler, Joe Styles, and what was the other one we were talking about? Brian Miz. You have six guys who are properly cast. And imagine that. They have great matches, and the crowd is mostly into them. You know, it's shocking what happens when you actually put guys in places where they will excel.
Yeah, the whole thing is saying, the audience just doesn't like good guys anymore. That's not true. The audience just doesn't like
it's a load of crap.
Miscast.
Yeah.
Guys, that's what that is. And that's yeah. And it's just it's an excuse to do what you want to do just to prove you're right. That's all any of this is. Yeah. This head game between a company that has a monopoly on a business and a fan base that really can't go anywhere, and who's going to blink first? That is the overarching story, I think, of the company in this modern era. Let's go to another break, and then we'll dig up some items from NXT, even the Kairi Sane Shayna Baszler match that we've had so much fun with.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Sala Monster sounds off. Since 2007, The Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
So, Sean, were you sitting in front of your couch chanting, "Bro, bro, bro," whenever Matt Riddle got the drive-by at NXT TakeOver on Saturday?
I am pretty excited for Matt Riddle in NXT. I'm not gonna lie. He is one of the more exciting talents to come along in a long time, and this is gonna be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and he's one of the guys that he's pretty well known for a variety of reasons: his UFC run, his love of smoking weed, and
of course,
but he's not fully fleshed out in the wrestling world. I feel like I know a lot about Matt Riddle, but I haven't seen a ton of Matt Riddle matches, to be honest with you.
No, I haven't either.
Like a guy like when Nakamura came by, or even when Kota Ibushi did his thing. Well, you have more of like a hit, you know what they are with the Japan guys. Riddle's one of the guys that's coming more from the American indies that wasn't in Ring of Honor. So we don't know a ton. I would say unless you're just, you know, the guy who has the Evolve streaming service and all that stuff and goes to these events, nobody, I feel like a lot of the people don't actually know how good of a wrestler Matt Riddle is. With that said, he has seemingly everything you would like. He's got a fun personality. He's got the Vince look. He's blonde haired and blue eyes, which seems to, you know, sometimes play a role in getting things done. How well do you think he's going to take to the NXT crowd, and how well do you think the NXT crowd is going to take to him?
Oh, man, it's a match made in heaven. It's going to be perfect. I mean, it's like you said, he is a good fit not only for NXT but for the main roster. So this is one of those guys where if Vince manages to screw him up somehow, which is, let's face it, not out of the realm of possibility, then it is going to be one of the bigger indictments on his competence in a long time, because Matt Riddle, I mean, he's going to be able, to me, this is a guy who's going to be able to very naturally engage with the crowd. He puts on tremendous matches, and he's got a great look. He's got a tremendous look. He's tall, which is one of the things that that McMahon requires. That's so freaking annoying, but he's already got the height and he's got a great look. So it's going to be, I mean, I just don't see any way that this could go wrong, which means it's totally doomed.
Whenever you realize that in the last couple of years, Elias, Bliss, and Carmella are like the most successful call-ups that they've had, guys that were trash in NXT, like that's when you know that something, and you know, guys like Balor just, you know, are, and Bayley and Sasha are criminally misused. I'm done projecting what someone's going to be based on their NXT run.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, there is Samoa Joe, obviously, but even Samoa Joe Well, I shouldn't say that. He's been presented pretty well. Yeah,
somebody has some advocacy for Samoa Joe somewhere at the top.
Yeah. Also, he's freaking awesome. So there is that too.
Well, he's big. I mean, he's not tall, but he's
he is big.
So that plays a role.
Yeah.
Right, which is why like a guy like AJ Styles didn't go to NXT, and I think that helped him in so many ways that like wasn't a momentum for him. You know, I mean, people liked him, but. And he got the big reaction at the Rumble, but like there's this thing, and I think it hurts as fans. You have these expectations of what's of Nakamura, of Balor, of all these guys, again, Bayley and Sasha and Becky, what they were in NXT. And you think, okay, well, that's got to translate, right? And we always find these ways to fit it. Like, oh, well, you know, Finn has got all this merchandising potential and all this. And then it just goes to the main roster and it's a clean slate, and it's that clean slate. There's no reason for it, and it's selective, which hurts things. So I'm done projecting. With that said, I just don't think Matt Riddle's going to be in NXT a long time. He doesn't strike because of all those things. I think, you know, they'll want to bring him up, and he's probably ready enough. I would like, you know, sometimes you wonder why NXT doesn't serve. It's not really developmental. I think we need to get past that in a way.
Yeah.
You know, Triple H always going on, oh, Finn Balor didn't know where the cameras were, so we had to show. Well, really, it took him 4 years to learn where the cameras are. Finn Balor's like the stupidest guy in the world, if that's really the case. It's its own brand. It's the brand for the smart marks. That's what whenever it loses the pretenses of being about developmental and sort of goes into that, that's what it's more, I think, of enjoyable. Which is why it's like when they go to the main roster, it's like, you know, the college player that was a good shooter in college. Well, you know, he's not going to do anything in the NBA. He'll just be like, you know, Jimmer Fredette playing on his own personal league. That's what happens with NXT. Right. That wasn't a personal shot, Sean, at all.
No offense taken. Yeah. No offense taken.
But with that said, yeah, I think this is a good signing, and I think it's going to get interesting because even the MMA crowd who. I wouldn't say the ones who like to troll pro wrestling, but are kind of like generally aware of pro wrestling, have always taken an interest in Matt Riddle and kind of like, oh, he's been. And I think they've always been kind of shocked to see how good he's done, because while he has the notoriety of being a UFC fighter, it's more of a notoriety of how he left the UFC. It's not like there was a ton of buzz around Matt Riddle whenever he was a fighter. So I think that crowd will always just kind of has been kind of keeping tabs on him. What do you think of the MMA invasion going on right now? Is there more of this to come?
I mean, I think it all depends. You know, it's kind of just been a confluence of circumstances, or I don't know if that's a word I'm looking for, but it's been it's just a coincidence that these guys kind of are ready to go in at the same time into the business, and they happen to be pretty good. You know, I don't know. There's probably more to come. Yeah. Because, you know, you figure these guys are good athletes, that are fighting in MMA, and they have, if they know what they're doing to a certain extent, they have some semblance of an idea of how to sell themselves. So, you know, obviously that's a big part of wrestling. So, yeah, I mean, they've got a good base if it's something that they're interested in doing. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we continue to see this. You know, it's probably not going to be, continue to be an invasion of sorts, but wouldn't be surprising at all.
Yeah, I think the health and the growth of the indie scene has kind of been responsible for this. Guys like Matt Riddle and Shayna Baszler could make a name somewhere else and take and, you know, kind of take their lumps elsewhere before they get to the big show. I think that's helped. I think in the past, when somebody had MMA training or been an MMA fighter, then they come in and then they're there in Memphis, and then the MMA kind of gets beaten out of them before they would come up to the main roster, and that would just be something that you remembered. Oh yeah, they were involved in MMA or such. So yeah, I like that. I've said this before. I like that now, though. It seems like MMA fighters are realizing that's another avenue I can go down if my career doesn't work out, which I think helps. I'm waiting for the flow to go the other way, but CM Punk is not helping the situation at all.
No, I think it's much more likely that it continues to run from MMA to wrestling than vice versa.
Right. And there's such a beating on the body through training and all that happens in pro wrestling that it doesn't seem as likely. Let's talk about Shayna Baszler. We never talk about her on this show. I realized that as I was watching the match on Saturday. Maybe that's why I wasn't paying attention to Ronda's great mic skills from the audience. But I was thinking, we never discuss her on this is MMA talk for pro wrestling fans, and we never discuss Shayna Baszler. She dropped the title. Do you think she's coming up to the main roster?
I had the thought because going into the event, I figured that she would retain. But now with Ronda winning the title and, you know, obviously they have a lot of synergy between the four horsewomen and all that kind of stuff. It wouldn't surprise me if she ends up on the main roster. That being said, I don't know if the other two of their, you know, Jessamyn Duke and who's the fourth one that I can't remember. Yeah, Marina Shafir. I don't know if they're all ready to go to the roster. I mean, obviously the other two aren't even in really in NXT yet as far as on screen. But it's possible that she goes to the main roster. I think there's probably something to that, but I don't think it's a sure thing.
Yeah, it's the main roster call up is like different now than it was a couple years ago. Remember they used to kind of share time at the end of Owens was on both or Sasha Banks was on both. Now it's like they just lose the title and then they're on Raw the next night. Like there's not a lot of follow up anywhere. There's a little more turnaround. The call ups seem to get expedited a lot quicker now than they did before. So I wouldn't be surprised to see her either tonight, more likely on SmackDown though, if she goes, keep her away from Ronda. Like it, I understand that they probably want to work together. There's something to be had there. But, like, save it for Survivor Series to where they're on the same side. Because Shayna, and this was a little bit of my commentary on Shayna, she's such a good heel. I like nothing about her, but in a good way, not in a turn off the TV way. Like, gosh, she's so mean. She's such a, like, she's like she's the female Samoa Joe in a lot of ways like that. Like why would anybody be her friend? And Ronda, who is such a good, I don't say good baby face by traditional standards, but the crowd's into, and you know, she's supposed to be fighting for the right things and the positive end of things. Don't put her in this association and drag Ronda down or, you know, lighten up what Shayna Baszler is doing. I find her fascinating. What do you think of her in-ring style, which is like a pure MMA style almost? I think as pure of MMA style as you can get in pro wrestling without it being like a shoot style. What do you think of her style?
I love it. I think it meshes well with everybody that she's had matches with so far. I mean, she's got good squash matches, and this match with Kairi Sane on Saturday was awesome. I thought that's been her best match to date. And you know, I think her style just really suits itself really well to what she's doing now. You know, and it's almost like in contrast to Ronda Rousey, who really feels, and you know, this is not an indictment on her because she hasn't been doing it as long as Shayna Baszler, didn't have the time on the indies, but her style right now feels very scripted and very tightly managed, whereas Shayna Baszler feels she's got a kind of a smoother flow to what she's doing, and it's just the way that she handles her opponents is just so nasty, and I love it. it's really good.
Yeah, her from like a kayfabe perspective, it's as if what would an MMA fighter look like if they came to pro wrestling? That is what
exactly
she's mastered that way. I think they're trying to get that with Ronda, and like you said, you just can't compare because of the experience, time, and again, like you know, on the indies, if you make a mistake in front of 300 people. You know, the tree falling in the forest. Does it really matter?
Exactly.
Ronda, everything she does, we come up here every Monday and scrutinize every detail. So it's hard to compare. And I think what Ronda, they're trying to make, you know, what would a judo fighter look like in MMA, in pro wrestling? That's kind of what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think they've successfully done it. What would this striking brawler look like in pro wrestling? And at first I wasn't a fan of the way, like, she doesn't move. Like she just goes straight in and punches and punches and punches.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that as much. But as I've watched it over time, I don't watch a ton of NXT. I'm much more of like watch the specials and catch up on the stuff that you know, I hear about throughout the week because there's just not enough time in the week with like the 40 hours of main roster product that's required by law to watch. So I really think, though, that she has a good feel in her character. And she's one that I worry about on the main roster, not so much that she wouldn't be pushed, which that's a distinct possibility, but more so that if she, you know, if you see her so often every week and she would lose that specialness to her.
Right.
That is something that does concern me. But it's funny, I as like here in punditry, we don't want anybody to be called up. Because, you know,
seriously,
you know, they're just not going to be as good. Like, again, unless you're like someone like Elias, who is a very unique circumstance where his act works just so much better on the main roster. It's funny. You don't want it to be called up. But then you wonder how these guys feel and these guys and girls feel where it's like, yeah, nobody wants me to go up, but they're going to make a ton more money, have a ton more exposure if they got it's got to be weird. It's got to be a weird position to be in to know, you know, it's kind of like it's signing with the major label, basically. Like you're financially going to be in a much better place, but artistically it's never going to be the same as it was, no matter what Velveteen Dream puts on his trunks for a call. There's a guy. That's the one. That's the last one I'm gonna go to bat for that I'm gonna say Vince won't screw up is Velveteen Dream. I think
he
checks enough of those same boxes that like a Matt Riddle, which by the way, what a great first feud that will be.
Oh my gosh, yes.
They're very similar in a lot of ways, and I think that's one. He's young enough that I think that he'll be viewed as a product of their system and not as an indie guy, even though he did some work on the indies for many years. But this guy came up through Tough Enough and has been on, you know, again, I think he's only 25 or something like that.
He's 22.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
He's 22. You believe that? Yeah.
What?
And he's really good. I will say this, since we're talking about him here, what did you think about his match with EC3?
I'm not a big EC3 fan, never have been. I think it was okay. Yeah. But EC3 is the worst part of NXT. I mean, I just think.
Yeah, I agree.
And I liked EC3 as a main eventer in TNA. I thought he was pretty good. He's another one of those guys that's not on that level. And it's hard in the NXT crowd to really get over that like rich guy character. I think that just doesn't jive with what of this, even though it's, you know, backed by the big corporation, but this pseudo underground promotion, his character, it doesn't even work from a heel perspective in a lot of ways. It's just kind of, I don't know. He belongs as a main eventer in TNA. Like, I think that's actually a good spot for him.
Yeah.
More so than keeping up with the cool kids.
Yeah, it's interesting to get that perspective because I stopped watching TNA many, many years ago, and I never saw him in TNA. So my first experience with him has been in NXT, and the extent to which he's over has been baffling to me because I'm like, what is so appealing about this guy? I don't get it. You know, he's not good in the ring. He's okay on the mic, I guess, but I don't know. I don't see it at all.
Yeah, and I didn't watch a ton of his time actually in TNA. Also, like most of America, I stopped watching around like 2012-ish era. But I would catch bits and pieces here and all hear all the buzz that, you know, Derek Bateman was doing all these really good things. So I saw it in smaller dosages, and kind of analogous to The Miz, I would say, is where he was in that role, where he was a pretty good wrestler, really good character. Yeah. The whole storyline they had with him being Dixie Carter's nephew worked out really well. And with Rockstar Spud and Kurt Angle. But the NXT thing, it's just a different animal in a lot of ways. He's a guy I think would be fine on the main roster, I think. Well, he's big. He's muscular.
Well, that's the thing. He works more as a character than as a guy who's feuding with Velveteen Dream.
Right. And I think like Velveteen Dream has both of those elements really well down. So NXT is never bad. It's weird. Even when NXT is like average, it's just, I don't know if, is it comparison to the main roster or is it actually good? I can't tell which side of the spectrum it actually is.
Oh, it's great. It's great. I mean, that's the thing is like, like I said, I don't watch a ton of the main roster, but I watch NXT all the time and it's awesome. You know, NXT is like a throwback to me. You know, I mean, I grew up on Superstars and Challenge and it's, you know, the weekly NXT program is a lot better than Superstars and Challenge was when I was a kid. But, you know, just the development of the storylines and the slow burns, plus the match quality in comparison to the throwback. I mean, it's like a throwback, but improved upon because the weekly programming is better and the wrestling and the big matches is better. So it's the best of all worlds.
Yeah, and they really figured out how to make a special or a pay-per-view matter because there's not all this, you know, inertia where everyone's interacting so much every week. And I think that really helps it. So then finally they're going to meet up, or they're going to meet up for the first time since their match on NXT 5 weeks ago. And there's no wasted motion in NXT is what I would say about it.
Exactly.
There's nothing that happens for the most part. And we're kind of like, well, whatever happened with that? Or, you know, and part of that, I think, of being able to tape stuff in advance, which is an advantage that modern wrestling doesn't have anymore with the spoiler world. But when you can tape, so there's probably stuff that happens that they realize didn't get over and they redo it. And you know, so you just have those advantages. But they seem to be able to keep track of everything they're doing. So outside of Hideo Itami, I think he's been the one that just like, do we ever find out if Rikishi ran him over? Or what happened with all that? Like, that never got resolved.
Yeah, I don't know. I think some of that happens with just the call ups.
Yeah.
Too.
And which makes it a unique situation that the stuff just doesn't get doesn't get resolved always. But for the most part, like I said, they keep tabs on it, and it's going to keep going. That's NXT maybe doesn't make money, like they say, it's a loss leader. But I wonder how much those network subscriptions would go down if suddenly NXT ran away or NXT became just a television product.
Oh yeah, it's huge for me. I mean, that's the main reason. You know, I kind of go off and on with the subscription, honestly, because I'll watch NXT on Hulu because it's on Hulu. But I'll get it back for to watch TakeOver Live or to watch SummerSlam or whatever. I mean, that's what it hinges on for me is NXT.
Yeah, so definitely a valuable part. I wish that the UFC had something more. I think Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series is the closest we've got to an NXT in that, like.
That's a sad comparison. Yeah,
but it's got some of the same parameters that it flows quickly. You get to get out.
Right,
the broad,
right.
They try some different things. So I think it does that. And I wonder, like, is there a way for them ever to make, like, a mini UFC? They have these other promotions on there. But is there ever going to be, like, a mini UFC it modeled after kind of what NXT is doing?
Well, to me, that would be how you cut down on the glut of events is just by splitting them off into a smaller, you know, or at least just rebranding the smaller events, you know, even if they're UFC, you know, like how Strikeforce used to have Strikeforce. What was it called? Strikeforce Contenders? Was that what it was? No, Strikeforce Challengers.
Challengers,
I think.
Yeah, it was. I think Bellator actually does something kind of similar now too with some of their, like, there's other Bellator events that happen that don't really, like, happen, like those monster ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be if they would just scale them and make what being a quote UFC fighter means actually mean a little more.
Exactly. Exactly. And absolutely. I think I get why they don't. It's because they don't want to make anything less than anything else, which, you know, I've gone into in detail before.
Major problem.
And I want to do it again here. It's a huge problem because by doing that, then you're diminishing what the UFC is, you know, by not delineating between what's major and what's minor, you're making everything minor. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. there's so many ways to go. I don't even want to start. So,
I know.
That's
I know.
A whole nother podcast, and we're going long here. Let's go to one last break, and then can we talk some UFC?
Let's do that.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Sean, were you mildly aware that there is going to be a UFC this weekend?
I believe that is the James Vick and Justin Gaethje. Is that correct?
That is correct. You get a prize for knowing that answer.
I believe that's the only fight that I know of on the card.
There's some names actually on the card, but it's one of those cards. Anytime anybody says, well, there's some names on this card, is their way of saying, well, yeah, I mean, it's not absolutely terrible, but there's no buzz on it whatsoever. There's no buzz in the UFC right now at all.
You don't say.
This is a very barren period. Oh, I don't know. We just did an MMA podcast where we talked about wrestling for an hour and 30 minutes. So I would say, yeah, the buzz level is a little low. But the cure to a low buzz level, I would think, would be a Justin Gaethje fight happening this Saturday. Justin Gaethje taking on James Vick. We're in a weird spot with Gaethje now because, yeah, everyone wants to see him do all this stuff and have all these fights, but he's 1-2. So if he doesn't get the job done here, which I have every reason to believe he absolutely will, we might be in a really weird spot where he's going to keep falling further and further down on the cards, or he's just going to, you know, be a what he's been as a fight night main eventer. Do you see this going his way?
Oh, absolutely. I think he's going to bust up James Vick real bad. I mean, in a nutshell, I think he's going to make short work of him. And but it's like you said, you know, if he doesn't, for whatever reason, it's kind of interesting to see what comes next for him. You know, does he fall out of favor really quickly? I mean, Dana White said not too long ago that he's fine if Eddie Alvarez leaves, which is insanity to me. Does a similar thing happen to Gaethje if he loses this fight, or does it take a couple more? I mean, he's obviously got a crowd pleasing style, but he's also got a style that is not prone to longevity. So It's an interesting fight this weekend for him.
Yeah, and even if he's fairly dominant and finishes it like in two rounds, he'll still have taken a beating of a lifetime because that's just how he fights.
Yeah.
No regard for his safety when he fights. So it feels like a weird kind of deal where you're wasting a Justin Gaethje fight on James Vick because you don't know how many of these you've got. And honestly, any one of them feels like could end his career. Like if it could just go badly enough the way he fights and we'll never see him fight again. So
yeah.
There's something at stake here, even if it kind of feels like a very underwhelming thing. This card just kind of came out of nowhere because we're in this UFC dull period. And I don't know, it feels like you could have done something better to get back into the swing of things than Gaethje Vick. And then you're still 2 weeks away from Woodley and Till and that great poster that we discussed last week being posted over everything. Other notable things in the card, you got Michael Johnson taking on Andre Feely. That should be pretty decent. Johnson up and down. Again, there are names. I'm kind of into this strawweight fight, though. You got Courtney Casey taking on Angela Hill for no other reason than Angela Hill is like the greatest
tweeter
of all time.
Yeah, she's up there with Derek Lewis.
Yeah, I really want them to be a couple so they can just like combine their tweeting power.
Yes.
Yeah. And Courtney Casey, you finally got her USADA issues cleared up, which, you know, another strike against USADA, I think, being in the sport would have been Casey's situation. And then you got Eric Anders fighting Wikipedia list Tim Williams, whoever the heck that is. But Eric Anders, coming off that loss to Machida, Eric Anders, a guy, former football player from Alabama, looks great. Looks like a guy Vince would put in the main event tomorrow if he had him. But I think he just needs a little bit more seasoning. And I think fighting a Wikipedia list fighter is the perfect spot to get that done.
Every now and then you do need to get the Sage Northcutt treatment to these guys.
Yes, very much so. speaking of Sage Northcutt, Mickey Gall returns on this card, taking on George Sullivan. Ever since Mickey Gall got that beard, he's not the same. He just hasn't been the same fighter.
The beard doesn't suit everyone.
I know sometimes you turn heel when you grow facial hairs and that.
That's right.
A beard and sunglasses are a sure sign of a heel. Just like Ambrose had those gray pants. Like those are definitely heel pants for sure.
The gray pants are they're indicative. You know, when they turn black all the way, forget about it.
But remember a couple years ago, Randy Orton had that 5 o'clock shadow going. Okay, well, he's going to turn heel for sure. And he never did. So, you know, up is down.
It took several years. And now he's almost attacking Jeff Hardy, but not really. But
now he's like has these allegations that he's a creep going on. And so they're just like making him a creep on television, which is.
You know, I never put synergy. That together, but that is,
that's they something. Had him on SmackDown, like, creepy behind, like, the sound equipment.
Yes, totally.
Like, yeah, that totally sounds like something a sexual harasser would do. Except highlighting the strengths and downplaying the weaknesses.
You know, in some areas, they know what they're doing,
I've
you know?
I've always said, if Randy Orton could just be his, like, jerk self as a heel,
tremendous.
The money. Yeah, I just don't know they want to expose what irredeemable person he appears to be. And then, of course, Luke Sanders, boyfriend of one Becky Lynch, the very scorned Becky Lynch, taking on Ronnie Yaya in the opener. That actually should be a pretty fun little fight for a fight pass opener on a very underwhelming card. So, I mean, there's stuff on this card, but it's a FS1 card.
That is the best way to sell this card. That's the best thing you could possibly say about it. Yeah, there's Gaethje and Vick, and then there's stuff.
Stuff can get over, I'm pretty sure.
That's right. It's better than nothing, but it is still just
they
stuff.
They are fights. And they really are, because nothing, like, okay, even like we talked about that Johnson-Philly fight, that's a good fight, but Johnson's not going to be in contention anytime soon. He's lost, you know, all his big fights. So, like, nothing matters. With really any of this, and even like the lower card stuff, like you might think it matters, but it'll take a couple years till you. Oh yeah, remember when Mickey Gall beat this guy? Or remember when Eric Anders got back on track? Right. So it's just it's there, it exists, it will be broadcast on television.
I am told that is a thing that will happen.
It is a social event that will occur on August 25th, 2018. I think we've officially ran out of gas now that we're just. Noting the properties of the universe that will occur on this fight. Sean, if they want to hear you discussing things other than properties of the universe, where can they listen to you?
Well, Robert, you know, you can hear me on my other podcast called Stories of Your and Yours. That's Y-O-R-E and Y-O-U-R-S. That is a podcast where I narrate short stories each week. And if you want to see what that's about, before you download, you can hit up the social media profile, either Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at SYY Podcast, and that'll give you all the information you need to know. This week we've got three original stories coming out from the subreddit, the short story subreddit on reddit.com. So it'll be a good time. Check it out if you are so inclined.
Yeah, and it's really cool because it's not just Sean reading the stories, but there's like these special effects and sound effects that go along with it and kind of keeps you
bells and whistles. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Smoke and mirrors. That's how you get over it. Sean's nothing more than the right. Ronda Rousey of short story podcasts. That's
right. I love it. I will take that.
And if they want to follow you on social media, where can they find you talking about the Eagles?
If you want to follow me talking about the Eagles and wrestling and MMA and all things excellent, you can follow me at Sean Ennis. That's at S-H-A-W-N-E-N-N-I-S. And one more thing, I think I mentioned on the said Twitter profile last night, if you are wrestling agnostic and you're still listening to this show, and I know there's a couple of you out there at least, do yourself a favor if you've ever enjoyed a wrestling match and check out the opening match from NXT TakeOver this past Saturday night. If you have Hulu, you can get it without even getting WWE Network. It's already on Hulu. The match between the Undisputed Era and Mustache Mountain, which if you can tell me a better name for a tag team, I'm waiting. But that was the match of the weekend for me. What did you think about that one, Rob?
Loved it. And it was one of those where I just got the thing fired up and got the thing fixed on the TV and got settled in. And like, wow, this is amazing. The tag team matches are always the highlight of the NXT shows.
Yes.
No matter who's involved in them.
Yes.
I mean, the Authors of Pain were a good thing at one point doing that.
Right? Oh, my. Yeah, that's one of the ones that they boned over getting them into the main roster. But anyway, Tyler Bate, for my money, is one of the best young talents coming up right now. So check that out. Anyway, what do you got going on over there, Rob?
Well, I'm
going
to do my homework and watch that match again so I don't disappoint you. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. I make no pretenses of where my Twitter will take you, so it can go anywhere at any time. But it's really just pro wrestling, MMA, some other random 80s metal. Like that's basically all my Twitter really serves a function. But you can follow...
What more do you want out of life, really?
Pretty much all there is. You can follow the brand at MMA Torch. There will be no talk of 80s metal at MMA Torch. Or you...
Don't make promises you can't keep, Rob.
Whenever I talk about D. Snyder fighting next Saturday, I'll be in shame. And you can follow the show Twitter account, MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans, at MMA Livecast. That's at MMA LiveCast. And you can send us an email, MMALivecast@gmail.com. And if you want to hear better discourse than what you heard now, go VIP. The ton of podcasts that are really SummerSlam centric coming out. Before we did the show, I listened to Todd Martin, Bruce Mitchell, and Wade Keller do a really interesting breakdown of SummerSlam, and even you can go back a week ago and you could hear Bruce Mitchell and Wade Keller getting into the most epic podcast back and forth regarding Roman Reigns. Me and Sean did not achieve that level today, so I'm very disappointed.
That takes decades of practice to get to where Bruce and Wade are.
Yeah, that was years of built up animosity on Bruce's part of Wade's analysis of Roman Reigns, so that all came out in a glorious podcast. Yeah, I know the stuff is technically dated because of post-SummerSlam. Go listen to that. Go VIP. Go through the back issues. Check out PW Podcasts. Go to MMA Torch. And just support all the Torch brands. It rises all the boats to the top if you check everything out. So for Sean, I am Robert, and we will talk to you next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership, and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Progress Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!